Welcome to episode number 9 of the Technician Academy podcast, hosted by ASE Master Technician Richard Young. This episode is brought to you by Extend Performance. In today's episode, Richard talks with Chuck DiBernardi. Chuck not only leads the Automotive Technology Facility at Kaskaskia Community College, but he also graduated from the college's program with an Associate of Applied Science degree. Chuck's career as an automotive instructor began in 2007. He is also a member of the North American Council of Automotive Teachers and the Illinois College of Automotive Instructors Association. We hope that you enjoy this episode of the Technician Academy podcast brought to you by Extend Performance.
Welcome to today's Technician Academy podcast. Today, we're fortunate to have Chuck DiBernardi, Program Coordinator of the Automotive Technology Program at Kaskaskia College. Welcome, Chuck.
And great to hear from you.
So we've known each other for quite some time, Chuck, and I've been to your facility. You have a great facility, and I think you really have a program that has done some great things and is continuing to do great things. So how is the program going?
It's going well. Even with all the turmoil going on in education in Illinois right now, with us having some issues with the state budget, we're holding our own. We're getting able to get equipment like we need. We just bought a brand new Road Force Hunter wheel balancer, and it's really nice. I can't wait till you come back and see us, and I can show it to you.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So you've been there at Kaskaskia for 10 years, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. My history, it comes from industry. I'm not a true educator, being that I went to college, and as soon as I got out of college, I went into the automotive side. I didn't go into teaching. So my family has had a shop since 1970. My dad started. And in 1970, that's going to tell you how old I am. I was 11 years old. So
right.
Couple of years after, you know, he started the business, I went to work for him. So I've been working for 45 years in our industry. So I've seen it all. I mean, I can still remember them telling us in the 80s that with computers, we are all going to be out of work in the independent industry. We're going to have to go work for dealerships. But it didn't happen. We're still here. They're going to need automotive technicians no matter what's under the hood of a vehicle. And, or as long as people are wanting to move in something, we're still going to have, a position, a repair type job.
Absolutely. And I've had the benefit of being able to be around your students and talking about them and their future. It's inspiring sometimes to see the students that are out there. Now, obviously, that's not the majority, but there are some students that are really, really designed and driven to be in this industry. Would you agree?
Yes, especially the returning students, meaning the ones that have got out of school for a little while and come back. We got a lot of veterans that are gone through our program, and then other people. I have a student now that's older, and he's back in, and he admits how he kind of coasted through school, and because kind of the way education is now, where you're kind of be smarter than teacher if you pretend like you don't know what's going on, and they'll give you help and they still pass you along. And then now he regrets that he did that, and now he's back trying to make a career in automotive industry for himself.
Right. So going into that, and you've been turning out automotive students there for 10 years, and I don't know if the program, was there a program there prior to your arrival?
Oh yeah, we've had a program at the college ever since they have built this building that we're in now. So since 70, they've had automotive. I think if I get the history right, there was automotive, there was carpentry, there was welding, there was machine shop. Those were some of the first ones that were started out here on the main campus. We're the only one left that's still on the main campus. All the rest of them have moved to, there's a Chris Center is called in, where they have those facilities there for just their areas.
Okay. So we'll just get right into it. I mean, what you're training technicians for tomorrow. What value does that technician bring to the industry?
Well, the students in our area, we even do ASC student certification. So we're bringing, my goal as the instructor out here and program coordinator is twofold. Number one, to give them skills that they will need to have a job. And number two is to be able to pass their certification tests. So those are the two things. So the way we do it out here, and I think most schools do, is I try to make it as real world as possible for them. So they're getting cars in. They are able to make work orders just like you would in a regular shop, or they will receive work orders. They will road test cars. We have an area around the college. We have a campus that's pretty good size, and there's enough road on campus that they can drive the cars around themselves, or one of the instructors will go with them. So they're getting able to hear and diagnose, and then we're going to get, and then they're able to do the repairs in a timely manner. We even have a parts store on campus. We can get the parts in a timely manner so that you're not waiting 2 or 3 days and forgetting, you know, how you took something apart. And so they'll be able to do it all the way from the beginning to the end. And I try to throw people into that as soon as possible. I don't want to, you know, make them sit in the classroom day after day after day before they can do anything. Of course, we do safety and all the other things first, but we try to get a wrench in their hand and getting them touching cars, you know, from the beginning. So this adds a value. I have a really good advisory committee that we meet twice a year, and the advisory committee helps me with trends and what kind of tools and what kind of, you know, they've hired some of our people and they know where they're lacking some, you know, skills. Most of the time it's like soft skills and stuff too. That's really weird. You would think that, oh, you're going to be in the automotive industry, all you're going to need is just, you know, the hard skills. But you know how our industry has changed so much is how many hours we spend looking up information on the computer, being able to do a repair, and also the paperwork, because if you don't do the paperwork, it didn't happen, right? You can't get paid.
That's true.
So the kids need to get that built into their head. And then I'm really big. I also have come up with this method for diagnostic method where I'm making them think like a technician all the time. Even when we're in the classroom doing stuff, we always talk about, this is neat, but how are we going to use this information to fix a car? So make them think like a technician all the time. And then, you know, it's kind of a different way to think instead of how a regular person does, because we're problem solvers. People bring us broken things, which is a problem, and then we figure out what needs to be done, and then we have to repair them. And then I try to pass that skill set or information on to them. And we work with modern new world stuff. If you want to learn about carburetors, forget it. Come into my program, because that's not going to happen. or even, you know, some of the stuff that's so much R&R now, like, when was the last time anybody did a real valve job like we used to do? Nobody does that. So we don't stress on that stuff. We do, you know, of course we do, you know, the diagnostic side and getting your brain wrapped around how things work, and then giving them the confidence that they can fix anything. And that's the main kind of value that I think that today's technician needs to be when they, you know, reach the workforce.
Yeah, I mean, you're creating a student. Comes in there and may or may not be familiar with vehicles, and most of them are briefly familiar with them, whether it be through their family or even possibly that there are some still high school programs out there. They're few and far between in Illinois now. But so they're coming in there, you're giving them real world experience, and they're leaving there with some ASE certifications. Now, for the last, I don't know, probably conservatively, the last 15 years, I've been hearing, oh, there's a technician shortage. There's a shortage of technicians. And I kind of look at that in a couple different ways. There may be a shortage of qualified technicians. I don't believe there's a shortage necessarily of people to turn a wrench. Now, to me, a technician is someone who can diagnose and take the car and even talk to the customer. So what's your opinion on this technician shortage?
Okay, on the technician shortage, I think there's three things going on that really needs to be done on the technician shortage side. And there is a real shortage of trained technicians. You know, there's a thing that we talk about in the industry, and I know you've heard this, and that's poaching. The people poach a technician from another shop, and that's not a good thing to be going on. And, you know, I've even heard shop owners where they, when they own a shop and they are having a relationship with other shops, and they don't want nobody to know who their techs are and how good a job they're doing because they're scared somebody's going to take them away. So there is a shortage, and technicians also are lumped into one group. Everybody knows there's going to be A technicians, which are going to be your master techs, but you also have B and C and even D technicians, meaning by your D technician is probably your, maybe he's your tire tech, or maybe he's, you know, a lube tech. And then you got, maybe you got an alignment specialist. That would be maybe your C tech. And then your B tech would be the one that can do just about everything, maybe except for, maybe they're not really good on air conditioning or computer stuff. And then your A tech, he can do it all. So, and then, you know, and I try to compare our industry. My wife's a nurse. Uh-huh. So the nursing industry I'm very familiar with, and she started out at the bottom, and they lump all automotive technicians all into one group for pay. And that was some of the problems I think that we're having in attracting students, and also the shortage of technicians is because of the pay. We have no trouble out here at the college getting nursing students. And you ask any of them, the number one reason they want to be nurses is because of the pay. It isn't because of the hours and the skill and how hard it is, because it is really hard to be a nurse. You know, and they work 365 days out of the year and 12-hour shifts and all around the clock. Where, you know, techs, we don't have to worry about that. We're always going to have holidays, and cars can wait. You know, a person can't. But yet they're attracting more people because of the pay. And the shortage might be because of that, and that we don't have, like I said, licensing like nurses do, where they have to have a CNA for their, would be their tire tech or lube tech, and then their LPNs, that would be our, you know, C and B technician, which would be our, maybe the ignition specialist, or you'd have somebody in that line. Then the A tech would be the master technician. So
yeah,
that's kind of my idea on the shortage and why there is a shortage. And then other things, am I getting too long?
No. One thing I wanted to, okay, wanted to kind of interject there, you're exactly right. And that's one of the things, all the technicians are grouped together. And you may have, you know, if there's 10 technicians in a shop, there may only be two of those that are really truly A techs. And the other eight fall into that category of B or C. And then lube tech. And I think, you know, talking about this shortage, one of the things, and we can discuss it as we go, but is the pay, whenever a student leaves your facility, where do they end up?
They always end up as a lube tech, and they get discouraged. Right now, I have a student that's working at a Ford dealership, and he wants to be an A tech. This is a vet. This guy's an Army guy. He's been shot at in, you know, Iran. So he's not no young guy, and he's been around the block, and he wants to be that. Well, no, they're going to make him earn his ability to be an A tech at that place, and it's really, really disheartening for him. You know, he's wanting to do some of the other stuff, and they won't let him do anything. Now, on the other hand, I've had some go in the dealerships, and they let him do that stuff, but do they pay him for the A tech work they do? No, they still pay him lube tech wages, which is, you know, some of the, you know, disheartening, and why should I stay here and do all this work, you know, that I can do that I'm not getting paid to do, when it should be, I should get higher pay for that job.
Well, and you're right. And the other side of that, you made the comparison to nursing. You know, a nurse, I believe, I mean, you got at your college facility there, you have a nursing program, and it's a 2-year
Absolutely.
Program, correct?
Yeah, it's really even longer than that. You have 2 years of 100% nursing, and then you really need to go one other semester and get some of the other prereqs before you can get in the nursing program. And we have a waiting list. We start 50 nurses twice a year. So we're going, so 100 people a year are getting in the program, and we still have a waiting list for that amount. in our area. And that's a lot of people that we're pumping out. And how many wash out? A lot wash out. But some of that, to get through the prereq, they do. But why are people even wanting to do the prereqs to get into nursing? It's about the dollar signs and the glamour that they see at the end of that. Where that's like I was thinking that we have three prongs, I think, that need to be focused on our generations, on our technicians, to be able to help with our industry. I think business, education, and government have to work together to be able to solve this shortage of technicians. And it's not just in our area. There's going to be a skills gap in a lot of areas. Welders, there's going to be carpenters, there's going to be a skills shortage in plumbers too. And it has to do with these three things that are going, where they're not glamorous jobs, but people don't understand, you know, how satisfying it is to be a technician. You know, how wonderful it is when you bring a piece of junk in that nobody can fix and you're smarter than everybody and you fixed it.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful feeling. And the pay should be accordingly too.
And I think, I mean, I really want to get in deep with what you just mentioned, you know, business, education, and government working together. But, you know, one of the things that I believe, I mean, and being around several students, been around your students and several colleges over the years, and it's exactly the same at every college I've been to. Their nursing program, if they have a nursing program, it's just overflowing with applicants, where the automotive program may average 15 to 18 students a year coming into the program. And I believe there are students out there that are just designed and have the natural given ability to be that A tech. But those same skills will transfer to manufacturing, you know, engineering. And which profession is more, not necessarily satisfying, but financially satisfying, definitely, is not being a technician. So I think we lose a lot of students that are definitely gifted and qualified to be that A tech, strictly like you've said, is the price that they're getting paid, the dollars that they're getting paid per hour. And what other industry? I mean, I know nurses, I've got a niece that is a nurse, but she spends, you know, a couple, $300-$400 on a stethoscope and different items. Our industry, you don't even get started with $300 or $400. You know.
No, that's the tools. You've got to have a huge toolbox. And, you know, and in the toolbox, you know, you guys know this for a fact. I'm hooked on tools. I love buying tools. But if you don't have at least $5,000 worth of tools in automotive, you don't have anything. And anything, engineer. You want to be an engineer. Some of these programs that these engineers use to build or to model things are very expensive. And also the things that they do, some of the experiment stuff they do to make sure, the field testing that they do to make sure this stuff works, they don't pay for none of that out of their pocket. The company does. Where in our industry, you know, they expect us to. And I think that's another thing that would get rid of poaching. If your technicians knew that you cared enough about them to have a toolbox, and a good toolbox, a brand name toolbox, and they allowed you to purchase what you wanted, an allowance every month that they would give you. Now, the tools got to stay at the dealership or at the shop. They're going to stay there because they belong to them, but they know that you're investing enough in them to make them have a nice toolbox. Would you stay at a place like that or not be as willing to pick up and move to someplace else? Sure you would.
Absolutely.
They would think that they think you were wanting them to stay there. And also another thing business needs to do about continuing and keeping techs and keeping them from moving from getting out of the automotive industry is they should invest in them through training. I get so disheartened when these places will not pay for their technicians to do continuing education. And I know, do it online. Okay, most guys in our industry are not online people that train well online. There is wonderful tools out there online now that takes you from book to between book and hands-on. There's simulators that work, but there's nothing in the world that can make you get in a car and drive it around a block and hear something to be able to diagnose it or feel it than doing it. And doing it online just don't get it. Or me standing in front of you telling you about it in class, or you reading about it in a lecture or article. You need to get in there and experience that. Where you know this, the dealerships don't hardly have any places for them to go get training or anybody to get training anymore.
No.
Hands-on.
And that's the thing about these students, Chuck, is these students, these future technicians, and today's technicians, as far as that goes, are visual hands-on learners. They have to properly learn a system. I mean, they can read about it. They can read about the theory, the operation of it. But to really, my experience is to really understand that system, this group of skilled labor has to touch it, has to actually do the diagnosis, the touch, the listening, the understanding of how it operates. They can
Absolutely.
Read about
no
it.
No difference in the healthcare, same thing. The nurses and the doctors both, they need to physically do it. You know, and that's one of the other things, too, that I think business would benefit greatly from is have an apprentice program. Or not necessarily an intern, but maybe an apprentice program where they can get kids that are in high school interested in automotive, and then they can start them out working part-time or even at the junior college level and get them started on their way to becoming a technician, you know.
And when you talk about business, you're actually referring to shop owners and that level of, you know, whether it be independent shop or a dealership, you know, that side of the business aspect and internship and mentorship is something that I have always felt that it was a good idea. If any future technician could be a part of that. I think you really right. got to grow your own there at that point.
I think so too. I was at a conference in Kansas City and one of the most successful Kansas City independent shops, he was doing exactly that. He was growing his own. And he said, when you get these kids young enough, they start to feel, you know, your brand, and they feel that you care about them and they want to stay with you. They want to stay in your company. You know, some, I mean, it's not a perfect fit for everybody, but you know, it has a really good place in our industry that people can, you know, get that type of training and feeling belonging, that they're part of the decision making for the company and everything. And they're willing not to be poached from somebody else, because, you know, back when I was in school, he was the first one that told me that I could make a success. And, you know, they kind of get some loyalty back from that.
Yeah. And that's one thing, you know, building that relationship that repair shop takes a young individual and brings them up through the ranks, you know, and if there is so many different aspects of this industry, you know, they could go on to be service manager or be in charge of a parts counter. There's just a lot of, you don't necessarily, when you're in this industry, if turning the wrench doesn't fit you completely, there is so many other aspects of this industry that a lot of industries don't have.
Right. Our industry is huge. Our skill set is kind of versatile too. You know, and as long as people are moving around the country, you know, some sort of transportation, we're all going to have jobs. So there's some area that they can go work in. Another thing, okay, the business owners are all going to tell you, oh, this is all wonderful and good, but that costs money. Well, that one thing that they could do that probably would help our industry and them on the bottom line is stop selling our work by the hour, by the flat rate. Flat rate is good and flat rate is bad. Flat rate, it makes you rush through a job too much, and sometimes you cut corners to make it, and then you end up hurting the customer or hurting the business reputation, not doing a good job, or not being able to do the research. You just guess and you're a parts hanger and no longer a technician, because you got to meet that flat rate. You know, and they got to understand that we sell a service. Okay, in every other industry, well, say nursing, when they're selling you to get you well, they don't give you a quote and how much it's going to be and exactly that. And they get paid by the job, what exactly tests they're doing, what exactly process it is. If you want to flip it over to something else, carpentries, they sell the job. So they don't ask you how many hours are you billing me for. They say, well, what's the job going to cost me to do it? And I think we would be better off being able to pay our technicians better, being able to be a better service to the public on how difficult a job is ought to be how we charge for that. And then they would be able to turn around and make more money and reinvest more in their staff. Because if you think about it, really your expertise or you as repairing the car, that is what the owner of the shop has. They do not have any fancy thing to sell. They don't have they're not selling a watch or a ring. They're selling what you can do on that vehicle. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just sitting here thinking about the medical industry and the comparison there. You know, when you go in for surgery, or let's say you're just being diagnosed, but you've got a problem, you're being diagnosed. There's no quote, well, it's going to take me a half hour to diagnose whether you have this or that wrong with you. Then in midstream, they may say, well, we need this other test. As technicians, we don't have that option. You're very, very true in what you're saying there. And I really hadn't made that connection between the medical field and the automotive industry. When a vehicle comes in to repair shop, you know, they basically, before they leave, they have a firm quote. And if anything changes other than that quote, they expect us to call them back and say, okay, well, we've gotten to this point and now we think that it needs this. And they could at that point say, no, I'm not willing to do that. Where in the medical industry, they really don't. That's not the way it operates.
Right. I know. But it hurts. It hurts both sides, you know. And then how we can fix or get some help from that and on the government side, that's the... I don't want to say it, but the regulation I hate anybody telling us what we have to do, but maybe we would get more respect, like you said, and maybe more power or more able to get some of the stuff to go through if we had licenses for technicians. And I think that's going to be a must, especially if we come to the self-driving vehicles. You don't want George down the street in his backyard working on your self-driving car and then being on the highway with everybody. It's just not the same, you know. And if we, can get this regulations going through and, like you say, maybe have three or different classifications of technicians, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's a double-edged sword, too. Now, on the education side, I was talking to you about schools. Some stuff that we can do, you know, at high school, the guidance counselors, they know what they know best from their own experiences. Well, most high school guidance counselors go through the baccalaureate, high school or prep school to university, then get a job. Well, that's how they think everybody should be. People need to be exposed to this, you know, these skills that we need out here, and also traditional ways of education always don't fit everybody. You know, there's certain different kind of learners. People are more hands-on, and then at a young age, you will get. Sometimes you get somebody tells you you can't do it, or you get that mindset. Well, I'm no good at math. And then for the rest of your life, you don't want to do it because you've been burnt once. Well, I don't know. I think we need to try to approach and reach these kids instead of just trying to cookie cutter everybody, right?
Yeah. One thing I would interject there is you talk about the counselors and yes, the counselors are there to help guide the student, but you're true. That counselor cannot be familiar with every skill out there. And then on the other side of that is the parents. I think that is a key thing. We need to be an industry that is willing and able financially. And that I've got a lot of ideas on that too, but, to actually go and get in front of these parents and these students and because the automotive industry, I just seen the facts the other day, the automotive industry is 2.4% of the gross domestic product within the United States. That is some huge numbers. that's, I mean, this industry is so large, but yet, you know, we're looked upon, I mean, in new car sales, okay, that's some glamour, but fixing those new cars or being able to provide the correct parts for the cars, you know, this industry is so huge. And I think parents, when they're, and all of us as parents have done it, try to guide our students along, and we always want them to do better and be great at what they do. But I don't think the parents out there and the student are truly educated in the positives of this industry. It's still looked upon as, well, it's a dirty, grungy job, working in the cold on your back, and it's just terrible. But in reality, and Chuck, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but in reality, today's technician doesn't really get dirty much. I mean, they're using the A-techs are using their mind and their skills to fix vehicles.
There's so much driver's seat diagnosis that you do now, putting your tools, your scan tool on there. And now, and in this new service that they got coming up where they're able to diagnose remotely because the cars are all being able to hook to the internet through cell phone, Bluetooth, such that you can sit at your desk and pull voltages and throttle position sensor, and you can get your fuel trim data. And I don't know, I'm a big fuel trim guy, so I like doing diagnosing, looking at fuel trims and getting my possibilities right there. And I can do that from a car that's, you know, driving down a road because that information is available now. And so I think it's very exciting. I see opportunities for these kids, and that's another thing that education needs to teach people. Okay, everybody is gifted in some way, and everybody is handicapped in some way. So if you learn to overcome your handicaps with a gift, then you're a success. And people need to be taught how to look for opportunities. Okay, when a famous person stands up and says, follow your dreams, because that's how I did it. That's how I made my fortune. It's like, well, your dream might not have anything to do with how to make a living. Like, hey, I like to, you know, fly like Superman. That's a dream, but it's not a way to make a living. But if you're taught to be able to see opportunities, I was talking to the students this week. We were doing the steering and suspension class. We were going over tire pressure monitoring systems. And I said, a lot of technicians run from TPMS problems. And I said, you need to look at that as an opportunity that you know something that nobody in the shop knows. And that way you got a job, a guaranteed job, because nobody wants to do that but you. And in the car's that way all over. There's opportunities. People are better at doing, like you said, alignments. Some people have just that ability to be able to say, oh, yeah, that works like this. And they can do an alignment better than somebody else. Some people are better at electrical stuff. And like I said, you need to be able to see your gifts and look at opportunities and where can you excel and then make money. And I think that's a wonderful way. And education should teach kids how to watch for opportunities.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and I stress that all the time when I'm in front of students. You know, there are things in this industry that you're going to be better at. Definitely become the best you can be at those. But don't forget the other three or four systems that you're not so familiar with. Consider them and be good at them, but be exceptional at these others, at the ones you're already good at.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you have to be employable, you know, and that's an important thing to do too. I don't know. Some people, Mike Rowe is one of my guys I like. He always talks about that he wanted to be a carpenter, and he made something in high school and it didn't come out right. And his dad or his grandfather was a carpenter. And then he says that, his grandfather come up to him and he says, Mike, he says, I think you need to get a different toolbox, meaning that he's not going to be a carpenter. He maybe better get a toolbox, meaning some skills in another area that he's not going to be a carpenter. He needs a different toolbox. And some people, you know, and that's where you need to learn. And in the automotive industry, you can have all kinds of toolboxes. Like you were saying, you can be good with people skills, and then you're going to be a good you know, selling. You'll be a good service writer, a good manager that you can be able to delegate a workout. You can, you're a good organizer, so then you're maybe really good in the parts store. You're a good communicator, you have to be good in the parts store. You're good with your hands, you can do just about anything then on the repair side. So it's all, and the, like I said, and you love this too, is the automotive industry is huge, and we have all these skills that we need in our industry.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about the government regulations, and I'm like you, I have a little bit of problem with the government telling me how to operate. But you know, I've been to Canada. Canada has a program that you have to be, I mean, you start out as an apprentice up there, and you work your way into being a journeyman as a technician. And I really don't see much negative from that in their operations. And of course, I've not been there hands-on for an extended period of time, but you know, up there,
the only thing I've heard, like in St. Louis, where they have the union, the only thing I heard, sometimes it's political to get your foot in the door, but you know, that's the only complaint I ever hear about people. But you know, I think it could be, if it's well done and if the spirit is right, just like any kind of rules that you set up, if everybody follows the spirit of the rules, then it should work well, you know.
Yeah,
like you're saying,
one thing that you know that I've always had an issue with in the United States, I can go down here to the local store and I can buy $300-$400 worth of tools and an air compressor and an impact gun and some impact sockets, and I can open up a repair shop. Now, if I've never had any experience in the industry prior to that, is the work I do going to be safe for the customer or safe for those who are meeting that customer on the road? And am I really doing the customer a service or a disservice? Where, you know, with regulation, I can't do that. And I know in Canada, I mean, like, referring back to that, you can't do that. You can't just go buy a set of tools and open up a corner shop. It doesn't work that way. Their business doesn't allow that. So I can see positives, but the other side to that is the entire industry is going to have to get behind it. It's not going to be successful if only a small portion feel that that's the way to go, and the rest of the industry don't want to avoid that.
The way the government's doing it to us now, you know, with all the regulations that they put on the industries because of the environment, and then because we're on their roads. So, you know, we have the EPA putting all kinds of restrictions on us. Then we have the insurance industry putting all kinds of restrictions on us. So, you know, on safety and everything. So, I mean, it's all, the regulation is already there, but it's on the consumer side. It's not on the repair side yet. And I just hate to see it come, but you know, it's like everything else. It's probably something that's not going to happen.
I think, and you kind of hit on it earlier, talking about autonomous drive. And I've seen some of the numbers, and I can't quote them right away. But, you know, some of the numbers are projections of what it will save, especially to the collision, you know, what kind of money it's going to save the insurance companies as far as collisions. I would think the insurance companies would be...
Well, payouts on death is going to be the big one.
Yeah.
The payout on the death is going to be the biggest thing, because insurance companies pay huge amounts of hospital bills and, you know, death claims that for accidents that are caused by somebody else. And
yeah,
that's where, you're right, that's where they're going to just about, you know, financially it's going to probably be there, and then... So you're not going to want to be on the road with somebody else that has a car that has been worked on by somebody that's unqualified to do it. Then really, I don't know, on professionalism and everything else too is so important, and how we're seen too. All it takes is one shop and then to be, you know, not trustworthy and to look like a salvage yard, and then that ruins our whole industry. These new shops, they look beautiful. The ones that are successful, they're clean, they're well organized, they have very good reputations. Those are the guys that are going to be leading our industry in the future. And I'm trying to create technicians and future and current technicians that want to get retrained to go back into that. And jobs too. On the skill set here, I'm kind of jumping around. You might want to change this, but on jobs, I was reading a report that said that there's still going to be jobs for people that come out of with a bachelor's degree, but there's not going to be as many high-paid jobs than if you have a skill, meaning either automotive skill or, say, a welder. There will be more opportunities for you to make a living. So say you have 500 people graduate, and 500 people go to university, and all out of that 500 people, only maybe 100 are going to have a good job, where the rest of them are going to have to be retrained. But if you have the 500 people go to and get a skill, and out of that 500, you're probably going to get 400 of them hired at a decent wage, meaning because there is more jobs in a skill than there is as a degree. It's scary. Now, but the pay is higher with a bachelor's degree, but you only got 100 people or, you know, out of that group, 200 or to 100 people getting that high pay, where in the other one, I got, you know, 300 to 400 people getting that higher pay.
Yeah.
You know, you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. So yeah, absolutely.
The odds are better that you're going to get a better paying job with a skill than you come out of school with a degree. And then we didn't even mention this. Are you guaranteed a job if you have a bachelor's degree? No. How many people, when they are never told this in high school or in college, that when you get out, you are not guaranteed a degree with a bachelor's degree in whatever? None of them are told that. They all think as soon as I get through, people are going to throw money at me. And that is not how it works, because they can't see opportunities in the industry. And then they end up coming back to me or you and getting trained in automotive because they don't have – there's no jobs being a librarian or being a something that they got a degree in, following a dream and not following an opportunity.
Right. And I'm all about – following your dream. But with that being said, you've got to have some reality to that. You know, I would love to be on the pro fishing circuit, but I'm not very good at catching fish, but I love going fishing. You know, that's not a reality. I can't make a living at that. Now, I've been given a skill set to where I can work on a vehicle and I enjoy it. So that's the direction I follow.
But Richard, do you really think that it's a dream or is it a passion? You know, I mean, a lot of times your passion, I think you can take your passion with you anywhere and apply it to whatever you're doing for a living. You can choose to try to be more passionate about something. Whereas a dream, I mean, you know, that's kind of for fun and stuff. I think you can see an opportunity and bring your passion with you. And I think you'd be more successful in that. I try to teach my students too, you know, I do a lot of parenting, seems like, when I'm teaching, is to think about or watch successful people. And what do successful people do? They do a lot of listening, and then they also do a lot of where's opportunity at? And that's how they become a success. And not just that they go get a degree and get a license and they think everybody's going to come to them. You have to be able to apply that. And that's what I think tomorrow's technician in our industry is going to be very profitable. There's going to be people that's going to graduate or have a really good business sense that we're all going to be working for that don't know how to fix a car. You know, I'm sure that are going to be very successful because they know how to see opportunities and find the people that have the skills for that opportunity. And I think that the automotive industry, you know, we need business people. We all need good business people to be able to be successful, but we also need a really good skilled, like you said, somebody that can fix a car, understand how they work, have that diagnostic skill set, and be able to make correct decisions and not just own parts of cars.
Right. And I exactly agree with that. We've talked here for quite some time, and I've enjoyed the conversation, but I do have a few more questions. And it's one that really, I mean, you've kind of talked about it, but how does, you know, we know that, and you mentioned training, how does a distributor, such as a parts store or a parts store chain, how does a parts store or distributor and or a manufacturer, how do they help in this technician shortage that we've talked about?
Through training is what I support, and training. They need to offer or try to communicate and offer some services that we all need. I know guys that are really good at fixing cars, but they're terrible at bookwork. So a lot of there's some programs out there that they can be able to figure out how to, you know, do the bookwork so they can stay in business and stay organized. And a good parts store / manufacturer can offer them kind of management skills. Also, keeping the technician up to date on the new technology, so we don't just throw parts at cars and you guys in the manufacturing side get all the parts back that really aren't broken. Somebody just guessed wrong. I think that's one of the things that, and you can't guess anymore either. These, you know, oxygen sensors, or we want to call them logic sensors now, that the new O2 sensor is not an O2 sensor no more. And we can argue about, is it an O2 sensor or really is it a combustion or a lambda sensor now? But they're so expensive, $600 for a sensor, and you guess wrong. And how many of them can a parts store manufacturer eat? That's, you can't do that. And
it goes back to education,
right?
Training and
back
education.
To keeping people, keeping the employees, making them not parts changers, and it's education, and also giving them tools that they can use, like information technology that they have on, like similar to Identifix. Everybody's doing things like that. Snap-on does this through their Mitchell program. They, you know, they have stuff that they do now too that's repair track, and that helps them, gives them ideas where to test when they run into a dead end instead of just throwing parts at cars.
Right.
So that would be another tool that would help not get so many parts back, you know, that are good that people are just throwing at cars.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like you
good
said,
it,
but support, you know, support is basically what I'm saying. And brand recognition it drives me nuts when I pick up, I know here I'm coming from old school. When you wanted to go look for some quality part, like a Wix filter, you went and looked for a Wix filter. Nobody does that. They all put them in their own box now. And that kind of drives me nuts. They all, you know, what quality? I know this is a good, you know, standard filter. What kind of, who's making it and what kind of quality is this? I don't know. And, you know, I know that's branding, but I wish that we would have, you know, some more being able to see what good stuff we're getting,
right?
American made and quality, like you said.
Absolutely.
What we're getting.
Absolutely. So, these last few questions that I want to get in are just opinion pieces and more some fun question. But where do you see the future of this industry going? If you had a room full of high school students that, and I'm talking about both male and female, just the entire high school senior class, and you were asked, what's going to happen in the automotive industry in 10 years? What would you tell them?
I'm going to tell them it's going to be very exciting, that the technology is so neat now. You're going to be doing diagnosis with scan tools, laptops using lab scopes. Lab scopes are – I teach lab scopes even the first semester. We get them out, and I try to show them what they do. And that you're going to be doing a lot of neat stuff. Cars are so interesting now, and they have a lot of the same things that they had in the past, but they're just being enhanced so that the drivers have a better driving experience. So we as technicians are going to be able to give them a better opportunity to ride in cars, doing good jobs, and with the neatest and latest to date technology that there is. And we're always going to be there. Some, you know, so many trades that, you know, they could phase out, but as long as there's transportation going, we're going to be able to have a job. And that it's nationwide. The cars are the same here in the Midwest as they are in Seattle, California, Florida, Texas. The cars are the same. And this skill set that you're learning here, you can move anywhere in the country. You're not going to be stuck here in one place. You know, that's kind of sad to say, but, you know, there's some of the industries are that way. You're stuck. X-ray technician, you're going to probably work for a hospital. There is some outside of that, but, you know, you're going to still be stuck in kind of one place is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's very good information to pass on to them. That's great. So being a car guy, I mean, you've been around it your entire life, you know, and we've had some great discussions over the years, but what do you have any hobbies other than automotive?
You cut me out. It's going to be 10:30. I still have antique cars we mess with. My dad has, and I've put a lot of hours in, a 1926 Model T that he has been in the family since 1932.
Wow.
So, and we show that so on the weekends, and we have the family has other vehicles. My daughter's showing cars too now. Right now, I don't have a toy right now. I've been so busy with education and that. I guess you could say that it kind of passed the gene on to the the next generation. But that mostly it's cars that we do. Traveling, we get to travel quite a bit doing just the showing the cars around and getting around the country. It's kind of a fun seeing other things and seeing people how they do stuff. I know I enjoy visiting with you when we get to go out of the state and seeing you at these events.
Yeah. And I was going to ask, are you going to be able to go to Vision this year?
Got my reservation made. I'm going to go for the whole time. I'm going to start on Thursday, so I'm going to go for 4 days of it.
Great. That's great. I'll probably see you out there. So, yeah, I look forward to that. We'll try to meet up. So, talking about you don't currently have a project car. If you could have any car you wanted, no matter cost, availability, if you could have any car you wanted in the garage, what would it be?
Well, I have to go back to the old muscle cars would have to be, you know, I still miss that. If I'm going to have a project car, that's what I'm going to, you know, go with would be like the old Nova that we used to have when I was running around. And then if I had a car and I didn't have to work on it, that's two different kinds. I probably would, you know, one that would be just a big kick in the pants to drive all the time. I still want to go with a Ferrari, you know. Maybe that's the Italian coming out in me.
Yeah.
But if I, you know, but I don't know if I, you know, to be able to work on it, I couldn't buy the tools to work on it, let alone be, you know. But realistically, I'd have another muscle car in the garage. Yeah. But if, you know, like you said, fantasy, going to have a Ferrari.
Good. Well, that's good.
and go to Europe and watch them build it the whole nine yards.
Well, I've kept you away from your students for quite some time here, and I, as always, I've enjoyed our conversation, and I look forward to meeting up with you in Kansas City at Vision. Closing thoughts. What goals do you see for your program in 5 years? Where would you like to see your program at in 5 years?
One of the things I would love to be able to produce or have graduate qualified with a 2-year degree, because we have certificates too, where some of them only go a semester and they want to hurry up and get out in the real world, and some of them only go for a year. But I'd like to be able to see about 15, because that's about how many jobs we have in our area, about 15 ASE master certified students graduate from me a year. And then also, I want to see our diesel program come off the ground, because I want to get our light diesel program started, which I'm getting phone calls from all the dealers and all the shops around that they need a good diesel tech. Not a heavy. They just want somebody to come in and work on those, as the kids call them, coal burners that go down the road, those pickup trucks. You know, we live in Southern Illinois. We don't live in Chicago. We don't live in New York City. And there is a lot of diesel light trucks in our area, and there's going to be a need for technicians in that area.
Absolutely, and like I said, I've known you for a while, and I truly believe you'll attain those goals. And I admire your program and admire where you've taken it and the passion. And you truly do, Chuck. You have a passion for your students,
and I
am so thankful for that. And you do some great work there.
Well, keep it up. I just don't want to burn out. If we can get some help, I'll be doing well.
Absolutely.
So,
Absolutely. So I appreciate your time, Chuck. I appreciate your insight. And like always, I've enjoyed the conversation. But I really need to let you get back with your students now. So
thank you very much, sir.
All right.
I need to get back with them, too. They're calling me now. I can hear it on my cell phone. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. Be careful.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Technician Academy podcast brought to you by Extend Performance. Don't forget to visit us online at technician.academy. We are also on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Technician.academy, built to educate.